Right, like I always say, like it's not a hard job, but it's a hard job to do well. And we're all in it and we can all relate to it. And you have these certain folks, you know, certain people that you grow relationships and have relationships with, you can lean on.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
I've been waiting for this, Corcoran. Bruce Horner.
Bruce on the loose.
In the flesh.
How you doing?
Living the dream. Living the dreams. Good to see some familiar faces down here.
Definitely.
Dude, you're doing a lot of great stuff. Let's hop right into it. Chris and I know you. We don't know you as well, because I always get confused exactly what part of G you're from and all that shit whenever we talk.
I think it's West by God.
Yeah, Maryland made me, West Virginia raised me.
So let's start with that, and then we're just going to go through some things.
Yeah.
So a little bit of time. Where'd you grow up? What were you like as a kid? Some of those things, and we'll go from there.
Ooh, peeling back the layers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so spent my early years in Prince George's County, Maryland, and PG County, shout out. It was just my mom and my brother. So very early on, my brother got into some trouble. So it was like always this sort of right from the beginning, you know, had to figure out things on my own. Wasn't a whole lot of attention necessarily being given. And so for that, it transitioned into me just being pretty self-sufficient just at a really early age. So you talk about like when I was a kid, I always grew up faster. I was never really hanging out with, you know, kids younger than me. It was always kids that were always older than me. Mm-hmm. And from there, it was just, I was always really good at modeling the right people or the people that really interest me. And that was from a very early age. But like many kids, played sports, played basketball. I still had a really, really good childhood in, you know, West Virginia. As much as I hate it when I moved there.
How old?
I was 6 and just had an early age, because it's just like you go from busy, 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 and you see a bunch of people. And then you go to West Virginia, and mind you, like the Eastern Panhandle, a lot of people from DC, Baltimore, they live there because it's half the price. But it's like, it's not as fast. You can't hop on a bus or you can't hop on a train.
Mm-hmm.
So just everything, just a slower environment. Again, I think my mom, it was a great place to raise your kids. But for me at the time, I couldn't stand it. But I guess it did pave a way for me to feel like more of a kid and not have to grow up nearly as fast.
Shout out to mom. What did you think you were going to be when you're like high school kid? You grew up.
So when I was in high school, I got to be honest, this is a tough one because, again, you try to model the people, at least for me, you try to model the people around you, but wasn't a ton of role models around. So a lot of role models were, you know, whether they're actors or musicians or something like that. So to be honest with you, in high school, the only thing I really thought about was like NBA. But then you start realizing like, all right, you're 5'11 when you get into ninth grade, and then 11th grade, shit, still 5'11. It's like, and then your wingspan's like, that's going to be a problem.
Well, along the 5'9 wingspan?
Yeah.
I'm going to get it done.
Yeah, it's just like you could fight as much as you want, but it is what it is. So that was my... You know, that was really my dream. But then I had to, in 11th grade, I had to stop playing basketball so I could, you know, it was really, really good too. I mean, it's all relative, but, you know, in terms of being in the paper, in terms of going to AAU, but I had to stop that, and I had to pick up a job at McDonald's because I had to help pay, you know, rent. I had to help pay mortgage. So again, growing up fast, those were just some of the elements that I had to incur. So I think I was also getting to the point too, where I wanted to start making money, because you get tired of having just one pair of shoes for the rest of the year. You have like one set of outfits for the rest of the year. So 11th grade, I started working. But to answer your question of like where I wanted to be, the only thing I could really think of is just like, I don't know what I want to do or where I want to be, but I know I want to get the hell out of this city.
Yeah.
I want to get the hell out of West Virginia.
Yeah. Got it, man. It's a lot of responsibility, right? No doubt. How many hours a week were you working at McDonald's?
I would get in minimum 25, I think the most 30, 35 in a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, there are lots of great accolades about you. You worked here. Always hard working. Nobody's going to outwork you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it was like one of those things where I also had to have conversations too. It's like, you can work really, really hard. But if you have patience, right? Like there's something to be said about patience where I'm gathering that now, but before then it was just like work, work, work. And it's like, well, maybe there's a better way. Like maybe that hard work can be positioned in a different way. But I know I really appreciate that because I really, you know, I hang my hat on that. So to
the the evolution too. Yeah, there's the evolution. That's amazing. All right. So what'd you end up doing after high school?
Yeah. So after high school, again, having that question with myself of like, yeah, I don't know what I want to do, where I want to go. If college is, I thought I was actually going to have to join the military because I didn't know how I was going to pay for college. But I knew all my friends and, you know, someone who I was dating at the time, I remember her asking me, she was like, what college are you going to? And I was like, I don't know. She was like, well, have you applied? I was like, no. She's like, are you taking the ACT or SAT? I'm like, no. She was like, so she actually had to tip my hat off to her at that time because, you know, some people come into your lives at different points where she told me, she was like, no, you need to start applying and you need to take the SAT if you want to go out of state. You need to take the ACT if you want to stay in state. And so I was able to start putting this all together in my senior year. And, you know, things presented themselves to me where I, you know, after high school, I ended up going to a small junior college because of didn't really, you have to be able to visualize it. I couldn't visualize myself going to a big D1 school. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go to Potomac State University. So I started there. And it's funny because all it takes is just being in there. You might think, you might psych yourself out in different scenarios of like, I'm not, you know, college isn't for me, or this job isn't for me, this role isn't for me. Like, I don't fit that mold. But once you're in there, then it was like, no, this is just high school. Like, this is just, it's, you just have to apply yourself differently and you have freedom. So you have to control your freedom in what you do. You can't just drink on a Tuesday afternoon just because you don't have class, you know, till 3:30. So I went to Potts State and I just started putting everything together. And then shortly after that, that was a school that then all my credits transferred over to West Virginia. And then I went to West Virginia University and yeah, bigger school, but I was able to, what was really helpful for me going to a bigger school is I was able to actually see your hometown's a bubble. So you don't get to see everything. And, you know, your family can also be a bubble too. And that's the only thing that you're used to seeing. But at WVU, I was able to meet people from New York, people from Jersey, hear about their parents would come in, talk to them, talk to their, you know, what are they doing? How did they get in there? And so it was really more than just getting a degree. It was impactful for me because I was able to see how other people were able to live and, you know that there's a different type of life out there.
What'd you study?
Business administration. So standard business degree. I always liked numbers, always liked playing with them.
Okay. I got a question real quick. Circle back this lesson. You hit on it, but I want you to go a little deeper.
Yep.
Learn to control your freedom.
Yeah. Yes. So you're going to experience anybody that's either still in college or about to may listen to this, but or can relate to it that's out of college is
professional making my a little bit.
You have just because you have time doesn't mean you get to do. It's not always fun, or it's your perception, right? So, you know, in school, for example, that was, all right, I may have class at 11 o'clock and my next class might not be till 3:30. that doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be productive for me to just sit around and watch TV or do something. It's, all right, how can you get ahead? What are little things that you can get ahead? And how I could relate it to, you know, my work, specifically with Memory Blue. It's like, I had a lot of time on my hands when I was where I was living at in Ashburn, and I would come in on Saturdays, you know, because it's just like, all right, I know I have a number to hit. Like, what are the building blocks? Like, how can I plan this out to where I can get ahead? And so that was my whole thing, where I had to control my freedom, and I had to be cognizant of what is my next step and what is that going to lead? If I watch TV, what's that going to lead? I'm probably going to be unprepared for a test or something that's happening. Mm-hmm. If I study, or if I even apply a little, just a little, right? Like, we're not always feeling it, but like, if we just do a little, if I can increase me being prepared for whenever that's going to happen, I'm still in a better spot than if I didn't do anything else at all.
Like the SDR Memory Blue after the AM Blitz.
Right. I'll never forget. There was a couple of times you walked past and I saw your face red because people were playing. They were playing the little, what, a cornhole? They had like the little cornhole. And it's like, look, there's always a time, right? This game that we're in, you know, sales, right? It's intense. It's at the highest level. And there should be some amount of like play. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, for me, at least, it was, all right, I know I have an objective to hit, all right? And I have to schedule that. Like, play, schedule play, right? It's kind of like a cheat meal. Like, I schedule a cheat meal because if I just say, you know what, this day I'm going to do, just eat all this, it's like, that's going to leak into so many other, it's going to leak into another day. Mm-hmm. It's going to leak into another day. It becomes a habit.
Man, I love to have that quote above every ping pong table at the company, which is about learning to control your freedom. You know,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with the ping-pong tables, generally speaking, but sometimes I'm like, between the blitzes, that's like as important as the blitz time. That, you know, when you're an SDR.
Right.
The company.
Right.
And also hit on something that we were doing a podcast with someone recently who thought they were getting a jump on everybody by coming in on a Saturday, and they came in on Saturday, and Bruce was already there on a Saturday working. I don't know if it was Marco or I can't remember.
Bo said. The thing is, Bosted.
Bosted. Yes. Yes, it was Nikki B. It was Bosted. Bosted that he was like doing it. And he's like, Bruce was in the office. I was like, what?
Yeah, boy, he's an interesting subject. There was a lot. Bosted played a lot. There was a lot of other people too that, again, when we go back to modeling, picked up. There was a point where, you know, speaking on Bosted, not to jump around, but with Bosted, he was always at the top. And it was probably my first month, and I would walk in the hallway and I would see him because he used to come from Boone. And I'd see him. I was just like, dude, I'm coming for you. Like, I didn't even know Bosted like that. I was just like, dude, I'm coming for you. He was like, okay. Like, it was just this playful banter. You probably thought I was serious the first couple of weeks. Now Em and I are, you know, the best of friends, but it's like, yeah, dude, like, I see what you're doing. Like, I see you.
That's a great game. Let's go. Hey, back.
We got to get both.
Nikki Beans.
Oh, yeah.
To run a collection. If you're ever in Miami looking for a high-priced Ford vehicle, give that guy a call.
Nick Bush, that you guys.
So I'm still sorry. When you're jumping major.
Yeah. So why'd you pick business?
I always had, so my aunt was the only one in my family that went to college, graduated, and you know, she had a big part in helping raise me, but there was also distance. But her husband, he's an interesting guy. He, like, his business mind, it's like, you know, the really good business mind, but he, you know, in social interactions, just sometimes he would just not the most social. But I would listen, and I would love, some people in my family just could not stand to listen to them. But I would sit there, and I'm like, I'm picking up on everything. And he would always say, just like, get a business degree. And he's like, first of all, you know, get a degree. Just get a degree. You might not like exactly what you're studying, but that's where, if you get a business degree, that's always going to be a really good foundation. Mm-hmm. And it also worked out really good because I like numbers. Like, numbers make sense to me. If I back into, I mean, it works if I'm counting, if I'm counting calories, right? It works if I'm looking at a mortgage or looking at an ROI on an investment property. Numbers are, they're important, but they're almost imperative. And so for me, it was like, yeah, it was a no-brainer. Like accounting in college, it was very methodical. I really enjoyed it. I love an answer, right? There's some things that like come in gray areas. It's like, no, numbers, no, that's the answer.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump back here. So what did you learn working at McDonald's?
That I didn't want to work there forever. Hey, nothing wrong with that. It's that. Well,
no, everybody's got to earn a living or like, yeah, make money, right?
That's
no,
right.
No, no, not saying that.
No, yeah. It's that, you know, for me, it's, yeah, there were a lot of people that were, that struggled. There were also a lot of people that had so much potential. And, you know, you think back, and as I'm thinking about it now, it's like, you know, if you were just, you know, if you had different circumstances, or if you, in some cases, if you applied yourself in just a different area, if you believe that you could do something different, I think at a very young age, I was able to have that, be introspective to know that, hey, this person's got something.
Yeah. You know?
And then for me, I was always, because I was always an underdog, or at least I felt like it. And it's like, all right, you know, Bruce, like you have something, like, but you have to practice what you preach. You have to put this into practice and you have to move forward. And this is a building block. Sure, you'd love to be playing basketball right now, but you're able, there's something to be said about being able to help your mom. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said about being able to contribute. And then there's also something to be said about buying your shoes. I never had a haircut. My mom cut my hair until I was in 11th grade. I bought my first haircut. And there's something about making sure when you show up that you have a fresh cut when you go to a party or you go to an event. So, yeah.
Very good. So you go to WVU, study business. You like numbers. Where did you think that was going to lead?
I didn't know. I always thought that somebody was going, it's like, you know, you'd say, like, who's going, I would have in my head, like, who can I leverage to put me on to a situation? Mm-hmm. And I had a buddy whose father actually, his father was, he was like a scout for the Chicago Bears, but he had connections to NFL, and you know, I was really, his father was really appreciative because he was my buddy, but he had fallen on some hard times and I had helped him out. You know, I had always worked while I was in college, so I would be able to loan him, you know, money at times. And he was really grateful that I helped his son out. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to get into the NFL. I'm going to be able to this. Like, this is my shot in. And, you know, I just gave him a text a few times, call a few times, nothing. And that's no knock on him. But what it taught me was, you know, no one's going to put you on. No one puts you on. Like, you put yourself on. You know, opportunity is going to move. It's like luck. Luck is opportunity that meets preparation, mm-hmm, or however it goes.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. And so to answer your question, though, I had no idea. But what was helpful is that I was already doing sales in some capacity my junior year because, one, I needed to make some money. But what I was doing is I was working for a, you know, friend of a friend who owned a roofing company and had me cold calling in Fort Worth, Texas, Arkansas. Cold calling because I was in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for all those that want to talk about objections, you don't know objections or rejection until you call someone down south in the Bible Belt on a Sunday talking about their roof. You want to talk about the words that they weren't Christian when they were off the phone with me. That was, so I started to get a feel for having conversations over the phone. I had a feel for objection. And so I think, well, I know in my senior year, I started to say, all right, I like sales. But the big thing about sales for me too, that also pushed me towards that way was I didn't like anybody telling me how much money I was going to make an hour. Like I tell, you know, you get a salary and everything. So I guess you get back into that. But commissions, like I like being able to make as much money as I want to be able to make. Like you're not going to tell me I work for this amount, this hour. Like I didn't like that. So sales became slowly but surely a no-brainer for me.
Okay, so the experience in selling the roofing in the south of the phone, you thought, hey, you know what? If I'm good at this, I can make more money, and I want to kind of explore sales.
Yeah.
And so then what happened? Like, how'd you go about that?
Well, you know, I'm also in the restaurant industry at this time, so I'm working through college. So my senior year, and I'm a bartender, and I like being a bartender. I was almost like a modern day therapist. These are things that I wish they didn't share with me. But, you know, for the most part, it was cool because I was able to see, again, just more walks of life from different folks. But I treated that job also as a sales position where anytime someone sat down, I always shook their hand. I always asked for their name. That way, if they ever came in again, some people coming in just to watch their kid's soccer game, that'd be you, and then they'd leave. If they ever came in again, I would always remember that. So I treated it very much like a sales position because I worked off of tips. But when I graduated, what the hell do I do? I want to go into sales, but I'm in Morgantown. It's not, you know, huge. There's like two or three big companies that I could work for, but it was also, I just didn't, again, from a kid, I wanted to be around in the city. I was always a city kid. So I always wanted to be in the city. And I hung around in Morgantown for a year before I was like, I can't do this anymore. Again, you know, who I was dating at the time, it was long distance for a little bit, but it's like, I have to do this for me. So I moved to Ashburn with my aunt and uncle, and I helped my grandfather at the time. He was sort of on a downslope. So I was helping my grandmother with him.
Ashburn, people listening, it's a suburb of Washington, D.C.
That's right. So, you know, I'm there, and my aunt and uncle, they gave me a buffer of time before having to pay rent because I'm just running off of my savings. And, you know, I don't know if I shared this with a lot of people, but I probably went on probably at least 20 interviews since, you know, when I moved out. I mean, it was constantly, I was out there, I was applying, I was getting everything out there. And then there was a couple like multi-level marketing jobs. And again, nothing wrong with that. It'll sell you the dream. But it was again like, hey, this doesn't fit with me. This isn't me. And so, you know, before Tiana Bell,
TKO,
there it is. She, had a good conversation with her, was able to have the interview. But then there was some time, and I don't remember what the time was in terms of starting with Memory Blue, but there was a space and time where, again, I'm running off of my savings, and I'm like, more than the fact that I need money, I need to be doing something. Mm-hmm. Like, they're idle hands, tools for the devil. And I don't know if I have like a roofing concept, but there was this like multi-level marketing roofing company. It was like, all right, yeah, we'll do this, do that. And I was like, you know what? Just to get out of the house, I'll do that. But it was right at that point, then Tiana gave me a call and was like, hey, when can you start? And it was like,
dude, how these companies, thank God, did it hire you? It's beyond.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it was
mind blowing. Chris?
I mean, I'm not surprised.
I guess not.
A lot of times people don't hire on potential.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a loss, man.
Yeah.
So, rolling the memory flow. What do you remember?
I remember just like walking in, and there was like a, ambiance of just, it felt like killers in there. Like, it's just like everybody was every, you know, then you had the people that back then, for you all are blessed now because everything's wireless. Like, I had a wired headset, and there were the few that did have the wireless headset because you had to hit quota twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get that.
That was hard.
And so then I started. So the first day I caught that. That was the first thing that I caught. So then I was able to see the ones that had the wireless headset. I was like, okay, going back to modeling, right? Like, what are they doing? How are they moving? Like, what's their play? What's their angle? But then there's also that piece too, right? Again, like I went on like 20 plus interviews, and you know, that does something a little bit to your confidence in one way, because it's like, am I not good enough? Do they not see that I have potential?
Right.
Where was I missing? But what that also does, and what a lot of people miss, is that hunger.
Yeah.
And so the cuss on me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I lined it up with a tennis court.
Yeah. I was like, all right, fuck this. I don't care who's number one, who's this. I got an opportunity and that's it. I'm going to make not only the most of it, but I'm going to make sure once I understood Champions Pool and everything else, it's like I'm taking. I'm not taking all of it. I'm taking a piece of it. And, you know, that's where Bosted and our interactions came in, because it was like, all right, like I see you, but I'm coming for you.
Where's Nick from?
He's from Chicago.
So you got the kid from Chicago at the University of Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
You got the kid from PG County, West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
The WVU meeting chemistry major and business major meeting. And
the most uncommon dude, like the fact that like him and I are like, we're the best of friends now, but that goes to show
you guys have a lot coming though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are both competitive.
You have a lot of shit values.
Like, yeah.
People. It's just like, that's what we keep getting. I take great pride in like bringing people like you together and watching it
unfold.
Oh, cause Nick was running his freaking formulas.
Yeah. Yeah. The macros. He was a wizard,
but you know who else was a wizard?
Who else?
Carly.
The queen.
Armentrout was a, she was a dog. She would, because like she would, I still can't wrap my head around it, but she is somebody where she is a diligent planner.
She will back into
everything, and she will base it on a car payment. She was like, I want to pay off my car. I'm going to do this. And sure enough, she pays off a car. And it's like how, you know, she was a real work of art and masterful in terms of just how she planned.
Who was your DM?
Shout out Plesh.
Joey Plesh.
Shout out Plesh. God.
Joey Plesh.
Hell yeah.
Could not have asked for a better delivery manager. Yep. He was so patient with me. And so you take somebody like myself, there's A and there's B, and it's just like, I need to get to B. And that's where the whole thing, hey, if you have a little bit of patience, you can navigate certain things, and it might not be as far. You might not have to work as hard, or the hard work that you have may get you farther. He was so patient with me because I couldn't grasp the fact of, it's like my first 3 days, and it's like, why am I not at quota? So, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, young talent where, you know, there's just something to be said where you have to go through it. Like, you have to have the time behind it, because you can't expect, it's the same thing for real estate investing, right? It's like, I'm trying to understand these markets. I can't understand these markets the same way that other investors know the markets, because they've been in the market for 10 years. Like, they know what businesses are coming in. They know all of this stuff. Well, Joey was so, he was so patient with me, and he was able to calm my mind on certain elements to just like, hey, focus on this and focus on this really, really well. And that was, you know, the opening piece. It's like, focus on this. And then sure enough, I focused on that. I got better at that. Now the next part, the second part of the conversation became very fluid, became mm-hmm. very easy. It became really fun, more important. And yeah, I can't thank him enough. I think he was the perfect manager. And he also understood really quickly too that he didn't need to micromanage me.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, all right, no, Bruce has this. He's going to do the necessary things. He just, you know, I know he's going to do that. He just needs, you know, coaching here and there. And I need to rely on him to tell me what he needs from me. So really grateful for Joe. Shout out, Plush.
What did you do to get good at the role too? Like, so you come in, you got the phone experience, which is good.
Yeah.
You got the service industry, which is great. We love it. Memory Blue. But you got to do some things to get good at this B2B tech thing. How did you figure that? You're a business major, you know, not a tech background.
Yeah. So I talk to everybody with a headset and say, hey, send me your call recordings.
Yeah.
So I told them to do that. And
why was that important for the people listening?
Because I wanted to hear their style. I wanted to see how they did. And I also wanted to hear, what type of accounts, right? You know, somebody sends me an account and they're on cybersecurity. That's not easy. So whatever you're doing in your, it's also the other person on the CTO. Like, that's a different type of conversation. And there's something masterful about that if you're able to book meetings. And then I could also really tell, some people were, oh, yeah, I'll send something. And they never sent anything. So it was like, okay, all right. I know where I stand. But the people that did, so I started with recordings. And then I started writing out. I wrote out the entire pitch. I wrote out everything. I know it was on the paper, but for me, I had to just, I wrote everything out. And then I would go into the offices when it was completely empty. They weren't in the interviews. And I would look in the mirror and I would just practice it. I would practice and I would put scenarios in my head of what could come up or how they would do this. I just did that over and over. And I would also make sure to just get some rest and just walk around and just get myself out of the environment. But a mixture of all that in terms of my preparation, it was recordings, it was practicing it, it was me writing it down. And I didn't listen to myself nearly as much as I listened to others. My recordings, I just never, not because I wanted Joey, that's where Joey came in, where Joey would listen to my recording and he would put out sound bites. And from there, I would make adjustments there, but I never really listened to my recordings full.
If you're competitive, driven, and curious, it's time to consider a professional sales opportunity that your future self will thank you for. With an unmatched training program and a tradition of elevating our people, Memory Blue has helped hundreds of successful professionals launch lucrative tech sales careers. You will grow highly marketable skills through ongoing mentorship from seasoned sales leaders while showcasing your abilities for tech industry royalty and some of the hottest startups around. And you'll do it all surrounded by driven, like-minded colleagues immersed in our award-winning company culture. As your tenure progresses, you will attract a host of career options. This includes moving up internally or venturing out into the tech industry, where tech companies pay a premium for Memory Blue experience. We have immediate openings in our offices from coast to coast. Visit memoryblue.com/SDR and apply today.
All right, so you're here, you're doing your thing. You always hit your quota. Didn't you always hit your quota?
That's right.
Yeah, you're always hitting your quota. You're trying to take down Nick B and some of those other guys on the board. Who else did you work with? What other SDRs do you remember that were on Plus's team where you were kind of competing with?
Dude, Chris Griffin, man.
CG.
Chris Griffin, he was so welcoming. And another
he
iron.
Was.
He was just
good guy.
Yeah, he would get fed up at some points, but he was always really welcoming to me and would always give really, really good advice. And then of course, we called him Billy, but Dylan was okay. Dylan, when he came in hot. He started just booking meetings right out of the gate. He had a really, Western New York just had a smooth movement to him on the phone. So I picked up on him, and then Brendan Shields.
Oh, wow.
He was a good buddy. He was a good buddy too. So we all kind of just made the cove. We were the cove.
The cove, that's right. Plus his cove.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip over the walking home thing.
I want to live with that.
I mean, it's clear that you learned a lot from others by being in the office with people at that stage in your career.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know how people can do this working from their house at the beginning.
No. Yeah. That would have been really, really challenging because there's something about where, I always say, it's not a hard job, but it's a hard job to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all in it. And we can all relate to it. And when you have these certain folks, certain people that you grow relationships and have relationships with, you can lean on them. There were times, I remember this one time, I went 2 weeks not booking a meeting. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I'm talking to my dad about this. I'm talking to some of the other other people on my team, but you know, you also, you have an ego. So it's like, you know, Bruce said, quote, you know, 3 months, like you also don't want to have blood in the water, but it's like, which is stupid, right? Like you should leave your ego at the door.
These people coming after.
And so it's, yeah, it was, you know, you go through that. And that's why when now being in a closing role, it's, you have a bad quarter, you pass something bad. It's like that's, it's probably another door that's about to open up or some insight. And sure enough, I always have those.
Yeah.
I always have.
So you're doing this role, taking it all over these clients. What did you think you wanted to do next? Like, what did you see going on around you that, okay, I'm doing this. I figured out this SDR thing. I'm going to lose up this model. Where can I go with this?
Shout out TG. Shout out Gassman.
The Gassman.
Man.
Gassman.
I watched that man. You know, I'm very fortunate to have the leaders that I've had in my career, but I'm really, really fortunate to have Tommy a part of my history because he walked it and just tough. He was always the first in there. And what did it for me is that I was like, I'm going to be in there full time. And sure enough, I was. And then there was finally this point where he walked up. He came in, it's cold, had his pea coat on, just brisk walk. And you just like, he won't really look at you, but it just like, you could just see from his eye. This brisk walk goes in, then it comes back, doesn't say anything to me. It was just like, just then walked away. It was like, okay, like that was it. That was it. So I was like, all right.
The mystique.
Yeah. I was like, no, I mean, like this guy, I didn't understand how his team was, but for me, what I could see is that, look, he doesn't just bark, he bites.
Yeah.
And yeah, he showed up. He led by example. And I respect the hell out of that.
And you joined his team.
Yeah, that guy gave me that guy. He was a master manipulator too. I'll give him that. I remember this. I remember the time like he was like, "All right, new SDE position opened up." And in my head, I'm like, "Obviously, you should have." But I'm like 3 months in. Like, obviously, you should have Bo said in there. Like, I just want to let you know that. Look, you know, you're in the running, but. I don't know if you're cut out for it. Yeah, just shit like that. I'm like, all right, man. All right, well, I'll get here 30 minutes earlier than what I'm like. It's like, what do you want me to? So, but it was one of those things where he was prepping me for the next phase. I always felt like I would be on his team. It was, you know, Bo said, it's definitely earned his stripes right now, and he needs that shot. I was just like, yeah, he played those mind games with me. I was like, motherfucker.
But you ended up on his team. What was that like?
Yeah, it was.
This is when you were at SDE, right? That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
What did you guys do it then?
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of exists.
It was, well, your quota goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So that it went up by when I was at 12 and it jumped to 18. Mm-hmm. But then the switch happened, right? It's a different ballgame. I'm not, you know, selling a technology or booking a meeting for a technology. We have a service that is going to generate and help you build pipeline. Now you had to change your approach. And so I was lucky enough to have Bosted in there 3 months ahead of time. And it was like you're underwater with just your nose out. Like just your nose is out there. And every now and then you sniff up a little bit of water. Like you're still okay. But it was definitely a switch moving from technology to a service. And then there was also the, you know, quota enhancement. And then it's also like, hey, I'm working directly. Like I'm looking at Marco. Like I'm looking at, well, Joey was more on the inbound, but it's like, I'm looking at Marco. And so like Marco's, I'm like, hey, what did you do for me lately? Like, what have you done for me lately? So it's, there's just added other pressures, right? You want to
Marco Johnson, Joey Cohen,
Legends. That's it. So it's, And two, like, I don't think Tommy really looked me in the eyes and for the first like 3 months I was on his team in meetings. And it was like, all right, so I have to prove myself to Tommy. I have to make sure Marco's fed. I have Bo said right next to me. So I got to make sure that I'm like, get cool. Yeah. So it was like all these added pressures that I put on myself that weren't really there. Really important for younger folks to understand what pressures are there, like what's fact, what's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, pause on that for a second.
Yeah.
So I would argue too, so you put that pressure on yourself, right? But you're on a team of high performing individuals.
Right.
Think who we're talking about. Joey Cohen, Marco Johnson, Nick Bosted, Carly Almentrap, you're the junior person on the team at the time, we love Bosted on the left ahead of you, and Gassman.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll go into battle at any company with that crew.
Yeah, it was the Navy SEALs of inside sales.
Right?
It was, yeah, there was a lot. So, yeah, it was.
Talk about that pressure thing, though, that for other folks. And we're not doing all the time, but we gotta speed up. You just talk a lot of knowledge. So
I do what I can.
Yes.
No, I mean, look, the pressure was there because I knew come first Friday, I did not like not being talked about. Like, I did not like my name on there. And now it's not like an SDR where you slip under the rug. It's no, you're on a small team. You're going to be on there. You better fucking make sure you have your shit right. You better make sure you have logos on there. And yeah, man.
And just for the listeners who aren't familiar, first Friday, once a quarter, we get together, we talk about the highlights of the previous quarter, and we recognize the performance of the sales team, the SDEs, the AEs, etc. And we only highlight the top performers. So, and it's for the entire company. So it's important for some to see that recognition.
Yeah. We also want the stuff we're not doing well as a company, but in terms of like acknowledging that people who are crushing it, you know,
yeah,
it matters to people.
It, yeah. And look, there's that, like, maybe it shouldn't matter, but you know, for me, I like to know, it's important to know I'm really good at being able to see the things that I'm not doing well. Like when it comes to a leader, a coach, and Tommy was really good at that too. Like he could tell me like, hey, like you're doing really good things here, but that recognition means a lot. And in some cases it was more than actually the commission at the end of it. It was, no, all right, Bruce, like you're changing something, right? This is bigger than just a check. This is bigger than, you know, moving up in a company. This is, you know, you're changing a cycle that is, you know, in your family, right? You're moving up in the world and you're putting your stamp on. So it was just bigger for me.
Yeah. When did you realize that?
That I was doing it, that was my why?
Yeah. Was it, I mean, it could have been when you're in college. I don't know. Was it in our college?
Yeah. No, it was really
interesting. I'm making it.
Yeah. I think when I graduated, that was a big milestone mm-hmm. for me. And I think with other people, it was like, yeah, it's just what you do. For me, it was like, no, you got to realize, like, come, you know, by the second half of my senior year, it was like, oh, yeah, I'll go to college.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, like, I didn't know. But that, me graduating college, it was like, you know what, now, whenever I do have kids or something, it's just like, well, now you have to, at the bare minimum, you have to graduate college.
Yeah.
You know, like, right. That's now the standard.
Yeah.
And so now I'm realizing, too, it's just like, well, what's your standard? So I asked that question to myself of just like, what are your standards?
Yeah.
And so now, yeah, so to answer your question, I think it was
graduate. No, excellent. Love it. But it sounds like that was important to you too, to keep going. Even now, obviously.
Yeah.
All right. So you're making a move into the closing role.
Yeah.
What did you realize? You know, you got to that level, you got bumped up. Well, what kind of things do you have to realize in your game as you go from an opening door to slamming it shut?
Well, I learned really quickly that a half hour was a long time. it was like I would practice. I remember my first call, practice like all of these points. And then, but I would shoot them all out so fast. And it's like 15 minutes in. And it's like, you know, I got Tommy on the other end just listening. And it's like, I don't know what, that's all I got. That's all I got. So,
in that transition, right?
Yeah. So, having that one on one, then you're speaking with the VP of marketing. a director of marketing, a CRO. It's like, you know, these are people that are, you know, where you aspire to be. And so you want to do a good job. You put pressure on yourself. But yeah, half hour was so long. Now it's like, now half hour is just not enough
time. Correct.
But that was the first thing that I recognized. And then two, there was also something of, it's not about you, right? It's, what are their goals? Like, what are the pains? Like, what are they dealing with? And, but like, also, how do you align to their goals? Like, understanding that. And it took a little bit to really be able to ask the question confidently of the pain and really get them to talk about that. So that was a hurdle when I first jumped on there.
What did you get good at?
I got good at it. So there was another thing that forced me to have to learn really quickly, is because when I moved down to Austin, so I was only in a closing role in Next to Tommy for 2-3 months tops.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, looking back, if I could go back, if I had a crystal ball, it's like, I think I still would have ended up in Austin, but I probably would have pushed it out.
We should have told you to wait, but we're more than happy to. Someone like you, Bruce, who works so hard, does this so well, and you say, well, move to Austin. Like, let him move to Austin. You know?
Yeah.
We don't want to get in the way of that at all.
Yeah.
You know, selfishly speaking to us, we had a little longer. Whatever. You figured it out.
Keep going. So, but I started figuring it out. It's probably my fourth month. And shout out Nimit Bhatt, because Nimit, he was so masterful in face-to-face meetings.
Yep.
You were also.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, so your style is like, be a VP in there and just like, tell me.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but good.
It was the confidence, right? And so Nimit had this just confidence in these face-to-face interactions, meetings that I just didn't have.
Yeah, you were down here. So you moved down here in the office.
Yeah, and so that was a part of it where when we sat down and just being able to, it's one thing to be able to talk about it, but there's another thing when you're able to do that face-to-face, just talking to the economic buyer. I think it was about a 4 to 6 months where I just really felt confident. Like, I really knew my shit.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
What happened next? Right?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm down here in Austin, I'm in Tech City, I'm learning how to close, I can close now.
Yeah. Just so I'm clear too, like the next phase, like after memory blew.
Yeah.
So, well, I realized that because I was so nervous and was face-to-face interactions, I was like, I need to stretch that. I need to exercise that muscle.
Yep.
And, I went with, I didn't really necessarily like the solution, but I liked the idea of, I'm going to be in front of people and I'm going to have to sell. And that's something that I'm really not good. I'm really scared to do it, but I'm going to take this jump because I know that I need to add that to my arsenal.
To your repertoire.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I did that, and I did that for about a year, and, you know, rose to the top, 130% above my quota.
Nice.
But one thing that it taught me, and being with Memory Blue and all the companies and technologies, was that I like technology.
Yeah.
Like, that's what interests me. Like, what is going to be the next solution out there? And I always had that while I was selling this product/service. You know, I kept my eye open, but I was like, you know, let me just stay focused. Let me stay the course. I did this for a reason. But then after that, that's where, you know, it wasn't a colleague, but a contact had reached out to me.
That's the great thing about the Blue sales role, I think.
Yes.
Right? You're selling to technology companies, to CROs. You said earlier, director of marketing, VPs of marketing, VPs of sales. People, you're interacting with those folks at these events, sent you to AAISP and, you know, other events, and you get to meet folks in the industry.
Yeah.
And you get to meet revenue leaders in the industry, which is great, because when you're good at what you do, like you are, they notice.
Yeah, Memory Blue, I'm always internally grateful for the experiences that I was able to have in the contacts as a result, right? You're not thinking of when you're shaking this person's hand, or if you're talking to these people on the phone, selling them, you're not thinking that they're going to do something for you later on, or that this is going to be there, but you all were able to, Memory Blue was able to put me in positions to have these interactions. And because of those interactions, then career progresses. Mm-hmm. These relationships get built and, you know, it takes on a life of its own.
So you met someone, an AASP event, right?
That's right. That's right.
Stay in touch over the years. This guy kept track of you. You kept track of him.
Yeah, because, I mean, he also did, like, hey, it's a startup. And, mm-hmm. like, Memory Blue is your college for, not hard work, but it's your college for how can you pull money out of nowhere? Mm-hmm. How can you find money? Like, that's when you talk about, like, what entrepreneurship is, what being good at sales. It's just, like, how can you take nothing and make it something? And so he recognized that very, very quickly, that I'm able to fit in this part of the business and get you things that otherwise would take you a hell of a lot longer than it would take me.
If ever.
Yeah, that's it. And so, yeah, I've reached out. Numbers look good. You know, we talked. That was another thing. I also understood my worth. And there was at a point in time where, you know, numbers didn't work, or not even numbers, but position-wise, right? And I busted my ass as an SDR, as an SDE. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I moved into a closing role. Like, that doesn't go unnoticed. And there's that part of understanding my worth, understanding my value and what I've done to get to this point. Like, I have a degree in pipeline.
Like, correct.
A master's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And doing services. Can you talk about that? Like, you're selling services?
Now let Bruce talk right, about that.
So
I mean, the difference between selling a service versus selling a product.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, a technology, you have something tangible, right? You have something that in theory is going to do this. Where, you know, selling services, it's, you can't mess up, right? You're selling a service. They have to trust you. They have to trust you. They have to believe in you. They have to believe in the caliber of person that you are, mm-hmm. because then that chances are that the caliber of company and who's going to be working on it. Like, there's more of an emotional play, I think, that comes into it, where technology is like, all right, yeah, does this go? Services, no, it's like, we have to have something. We have to have something. We're in this together, right? And agree upon that.
Yeah, and the prospect has to believe that.
That's right.
That's kind of that's that out of thin air part you're talking about, right?
That is 100% right.
Can't demo a service.
It's a highly skilled level of expertise you develop.
Right. And you have to have stories too. Let's talk about that, right? Like, there's an element of storytelling. And it's, hey, I've seen this before. And this is where I've seen it. And this is what we were able to do. They were dealing with this specific challenge, the same one that you're talking about, right, Chris?
Yep.
Great. This is. And, you know, you walk them on that journey. And, you know, and that's, it's not at that point when you're able to do that, that's not bullshit. No. Mm-hmm. That's confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man, you said us the note I want to talk about. Oh, all right. So you met this gentleman, you can say his name if you want to, who kind of brought you along. And did you end up going to, you stood your ground, right? Because you've got this degree, advanced degree in pipeline building. And yeah. A lot of times people want to take advantage of just that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Because they kind of want that expertise. You're like, no, right? Know your level of expertise, because I feel like the people who come out of Memory Blue, not just people who stay, the people who are really good at the SDR role, we're top of the game. You forget that sometimes in Memory Blue, because we're hard on the people who work here.
Yeah.
But if you learn how to do this shit working here,
it's so much easier. That's the thing. Memory Blue makes it to where wherever you go next, it's, you make the game easier. The game gets easier, but you have to, like, start at black. This is black belt level karate in the SDR world. Like, you get that, you're going to be facing blue belts wherever you go next.
Yeah. So you got into the next role and you held the grass and, you know, I'm a closer.
Yeah.
Right. And what are you doing now? We got like 7-8 minutes left.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were able to work things out. We were able to get to a point where, all right, I want to be at this role. He can now afford me at this role.
Yep.
And so, and to his credit too, you know, he was also at the point of the business where, like, you know, they needed that frontline piece. But where I started and where he brought me in at, individual contributor, and, you know, again, you know, being at a startup, right? We're not big. I compare it to, you know, your garage band, and you're trying to sell out the Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one knows who the hell you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't fuck up. Mm-hmm. You can't fuck up. So, you know, bringing me in with what I've been able to attain, the knowledge from Memory Blue, I was able to quickly, like, in a matter. Like my quota, the quota that was set for me wasn't really to, like, I don't know. It probably didn't seem attainable in some aspects, but I blew past that in just my first quarter. And it's led me to now being number one in, you know, all of sales for this startup, working with some of the world's largest, biggest brands and expanding those.
How have you generated those opportunities?
Yeah, you know, fortunate enough having Chronologix and Chronologix tool.
Yeah.
But from also me opening up LinkedIn, being able to open up those doors, and then also being able to pick up the phone and yeah. have these conversations and talk about what they're dealing with, aligning to their goals.
Yeah. It's great, man. So, Bruce, kind of knowing what you know now, what advice would you have given yourself the night before you started at Memory Blue? You know, July 2017 is when you started.
Yes.
Over five years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have said, you know, use your energy. Don't spend your energy on what so much on the next person. Like, spend your energy on what you're trying to do, what you're trying to accomplish. Not so much focusing on what other people are thinking or maybe what they're saying. It's, hey, you have a real opportunity. This is going to pay. You get to this point, it pays out this, or you get this type of reward. You focus on that. Everything else falls where it's supposed to fall. And don't waste energy, you know, thinking about what somebody else might be saying or what somebody else might be doing. And if you are worried about that, you know, sit down and have conversations with those folks.
And being a closer, enterprise closer at an emerging company, how did the roles at Memory Blue help you prepare you for that?
No one knew who we were, and Memory Blue allowed me to be comfortable in knowing, all right, this is what we have to do. What do we need? We need more customers and we need logos. What can you do? Well, I built up a network because I was at Memory Blue, because I've went to these events. I went to AAISP. I've had these sales conversations. So I'm able to then jump into my Rolodex. But on top of that, I'm able to prospect, right? I'm able to systematically put together a prospecting plan, put together a cadence to where I can get in front of these decision makers and these stakeholders. And I'm able to do that again from scratch.
Nothing.
From nothing.
Out of thin air.
Out of thin air.
I got a big question for you too.
What's that?
How did it feel at Memory Blue knowing you were doing so amazingly well that you still had the second best hair?
That's debatable, but it hurts on days like this where it's short.
I'm probably gonna come here rocking the locks.
You know what happened? No, so I looked at, again, it goes back to just loving numbers, and I guess it fell on three haircuts that fell on 1 month, and I looked at it, I was like, $160. I was like, no, I'm shaving this. And I just started cutting my own hair. I was at no shape up or.
Okay.
But yeah, now I'm getting it back.
All right.
Get it back. I miss it.
Good. Well, I mean, Corgan, you got anything for Bruce?
No, that's great.
Bruce, I mean, Chris and I will say it to a blue in the face. The fact that you worked for us and almost did as much for us, we're eternally grateful.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, Bruce.
You know?
Well,
nearly 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm grateful for, you know, if I think back for far enough, like I could probably tear up. But you know, you all gave me an opportunity that who knows? Like I don't know, but you gave me an opportunity to where I'm able to sit here confidently, really happy in the position I'm at, but also really confident about what the future holds. Where so, I don't know if I would have got that elsewhere.
Yeah, Bruce, I appreciate you saying that. The reality of the situation is in the 20 years. In the existence of the company, it's provided literally thousands of people that same opportunity. Very few have seized that opportunity, and you're one of the people that did seize it. So it says more about you than it does the opportunity.
It's like a fight. What is it? Styles make fights. You know, styles make great caliber talent, and same thing with great caliber companies. So
very good.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce.
I appreciate it.
We'll do part two down the road.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Memory Blue alumni, are you looking for your next top performing SDR with the competitive drive, hustle mentality, and passion for sales that you can bank on?
The Rising Stars program connects accomplished Memory Blue SDRs with alumni looking to expand their teams. Rising Stars have completed their SDR journey with us and are chomping at the bit to land a new and exciting high-tech sales opportunity. They've been professionally trained, coached, and mentored, thriving in the very environment where you launched your career. Alumni like you hire Memory Blue Rising Stars because they can rest easy knowing they're hiring the best in the business. Learn how you can access this unique pool of sales talent by heading to memoryblue.com/alumni.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.